Holy smokes. Oh, wow.
Hi.
Hey, welcome, buddy.
Welcome to the Carl Landry Record Club. I always say what it is, but you decided to download it, so you probably know what it is already.
Is this, you kind of more jazzed up because of daylight savings time, I guess,
maybe,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah, got you fired up.
Actually, so we have two albums to talk about today, as well as a brand new single, which is a newish single, a new feature of the Carl Landry Record Club. Decided on the fly last episode is that we'll do two albums and a newish song to try to keep us
involved. Stay a little more current. You know?
Yeah, stay a little more. I'll do every album that came out in 1993 before I pick a new song.
Exactly.
So we're gonna do a badly drawn boy record, a record from a band called Always, and a single from Steven Sanchez. But I was debating telling you this story from this morning because it made me laugh so much, and I hope that anyone who listens takes no offense to the story. The story is not meant to offend anyone. The story is mostly meant to paint a picture about my surprise this morning. You ready?
Let's hear it.
All right. So for some reason, I've decided it's a little treat on Sundays and maybe Saturdays to rather than, I only drink coffee right when I wake up, and I do it to sort of like jazz my body up before I run. So that's the only caffeine I have during the day, is that. And I normally make my coffee, and during the week at work, we have coffee at work, so I'll have a little coffee at work, but I don't like buy my coffee out anywhere. But a little treat on Sundays and sometimes Saturdays is I drive to the 7-Eleven about a mile away. I get hazelnut coffee from the 7-Eleven, and I drink that. Now, I say a little treat because 7-Eleven coffee is like fine.
I was going to say it's not really a... But, a leader in the coffee game.
Right, you know? But like our friend Amos Lee is like a coffee snob, and I actually find more expensive coffee to be like taste worse to me. I sort of just like normal, base, regular coffee. And the more fancy it gets, the more sort of like vinegary or something it gets. Like it gets a little more intense, and I don't really like that.
Wait, because I'm a semi coffee snob, I would say.
Okay.
I'm not as knowledgeable about coffee as Amos is, but right. I'm definitely closer to that side of the spectrum. Because I find like the 7-Eleven coffee or like a diner coffee, it feels watered down. It tastes watered down. You don't really taste it. You know?
But that's what I like because I like the smell of coffee, much like gasoline and pipes. I like the smell of coffee. I just don't like the taste of it.
Really? Do you think
like I like how tobacco smells? I like how not burning tobacco, but like the scent of like regular tobacco. I like the way that smells, but I don't like smoking at all. Like I don't like the taste of it at all.
Is there? I always wonder with things like that. Like, is there something specific that you like a memory you attach to like why you don't like it? Like I always think about with taste and smell, like you it's somehow connected to some sort of
memory.
Yeah. Maybe. Place in your memory bank that because like I love the taste of coffee. To me it's like I'm frustrated if it's not very flavorful. That's the thing,
you know? I think. Okay, so the coffee I like is exactly the coffee you don't like. Wawa, 7-Eleven, Dunkin'.
Well, normal. Dunkin' amongst those is a notch above. It's better.
Okay, sure.
I would say.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, it's fair to mention, I do not put anything in coffee. So I would agree with you that if I take coffee and put some oat milk and sugar in it and a sprinkle of cinnamon, that tastes good. The flavor of coffee that when it is sweetened, like coffee ice cream or something, I enjoy. I don't do sweeteners at all. Like I don't do artificial sweeteners and I don't really do added sugar. So when I'm drinking coffee, I'm just drinking it. I'm really just drinking it for the caffeine and the routine, for the caffeine and the routine. That's all I care about, right? So anyway, so it's a little treat for me to go to 7-Eleven. Again, I don't know why. It's just nice to not make coffee, I guess, and just get it from somewhere else and bring it back.
One less step in the day. You know?
Yeah. And it's a little trip out in my, I go in my pajama pants. I'm wearing my pajama pants today. So I go out in my pajama pants and a hoodie. So I've noticed on Sundays, if I go at a certain time, there's this older gentleman in the 7-Eleven by the coffee reading the New York Daily News while he's drinking his coffee. And I would say this older gentleman is 80, maybe around 80. Nice little like old man with glasses or whatever. Looks like the old man from Up almost, you know? And I've noticed he's just fucking nobody. And the 7-Eleven people don't care that he's there. He's just sort of spread out on it. They have a big coffee counter. He's spread out on the coffee counter, drinking coffee, reading the newspaper, like every fucking word, reading the newspaper.
Wait, he's just standing by the, does he have a chair?
No,
he doesn't have it.
No, he's standing.
Wait, he's just standing there?
Correct.
Doesn't he get that? That would get tiring after.
Whatever. Yeah, but he's enjoying his coffee.
Wait, is he always? So he's always there if you go there.
He's been there. If I go there on a Sunday around the time that I went this morning, around 7:30 or whatever, he's been there pretty regularly. I've seen him there.
We should see if he wants to come on the pod with us. Does he like music?
Well, you may change your mind after the end of this story. You may change your mind. Though it would be a raucous podcast, I think. So I'm over there and I get I pour the hazelnut coffee, extra large hazelnut coffee, and I actually decide, they have almond milk over there, unsweetened almond milk. Maybe I'll treat myself even more and put some unsweetened almond milk. What a treat this unsweetened almond milk will be. What a treat. And I go to pour it in, and I notice that it is, maybe because nobody has touched it for a while, it's frozen at the bottom of the thing. And I go to pour it, nothing comes out. But he looks up at me, and he goes, what does he say? I'm trying to remember the intro to it. He goes, good Sunday morning, just drinking some coffee, right? And I'm like, yeah, you know. He's like, it's good before everybody like wakes up. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I really like this sort of time of the day. Yeah. He goes, I forget the next part. He goes, you married? And I'm like,
that's a swift pivot right there.
I go, I am. He goes, married 58 years. He goes,
oh, wow.
I'm like, wow. He goes, I only asked for three things from my wife. And at this point, I'm like, oh boy.
Oh no.
Where is this going?
You felt the record scratch right there.
He goes, S my D, F me, and shut the F up.
Wow. Wow.
So I'm dying.
What an escalation. Like, it started with, like, coffee small talk.
To a stranger.
80-year-old man by the coffee station at the 7-Eleven. Yep.
To a stranger.
But the way it started, see, the amazing thing about that story.
And to be clear, I'm editing him. He did not edit.
No, it was more extreme than that.
Yeah.
But the amazing thing about that is the arc of it. Like, you guys are just initially making a little coffee. You know, there's small talk and there's, like, coffee small talk. And you guys are making, coffee small talk, and then he just kind of blindsided you with this other thing. You
know? Yes, it was normal coffee small talk. And I thought originally with the are you married, he was going to venture into the normal, like, either the normal old ball and chain stuff or the normal, like, been married 58 years, aren't you proud of me stuff. Like, I didn't think we were going right to S my D and F me and shut the F up. And then, so I giggle and I go, you know, like, I just wanted to end at that point. And I'm like, because I just want to get out because I have to get back. I have to run. I have to prepare my stuff for the pod, all that kind of stuff. And he goes, what did he say? I go, yeah, not asking too much, right? You know, just I figured that would end it.
Yeah.
So I walk around him and he goes, I really don't need you to do anything else. What do I want for dinner? I don't give an F what you make me for dinner. I don't care. I'll eat any of it. Just give me those three things. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Oh, wow. He's continuing the conversation.
He wanted to further extend right.
His takes, his perspectives on it.
And I'm like, so I'm trying to, like, how do I end this? Because I don't want to be mean and just walk away from this guy because he's smiling the entire time. And I go, yeah, you know. But being married, better than the alternative. I remember what it was like to be single. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm married 58 years, you know. Must be doing something right. And I'm like, I guess so. Hey, have a good one. And I just get out of there.
Here's the thing. You're going to probably see him again. So
I'm almost certain I'm going to see
him. So how will you initiate that conversation?
Well,
he's going to corner. He's going to get you. Here's the thing. Here's what you're in for now with this. your 7-Eleven coffee routine. He's going to get you into a stop and chat every time you go there now.
Yeah, well, I'm going to let him know. I'm just going to give him a report. The number of times I've effed and had my D-assed and if my wife has spoken since the last time.
You should just write it on a piece of paper and hand to him. Here are my notes.
Here's my report. Yeah. So I needed to tell that story. And I'm glad you sat there for it.
And so. I like that this happened at a 7-Eleven, too. It could have happened a lot of different places, but at the coffee stand at the 7-Eleven.
Springfield, New Jersey. Yes. Oh. There you go.
Do you know what his name is? I'm just curious.
No, I'm going to ask next time.
I'm going to have to ask him next time.
Invite him on the pod. See what
See if he does. Ask him if he likes music next time.
Make him do the internet speed test to make sure his internet will be good enough.
Yeah, somehow I feel like we'll have a lot of trouble with his connection if we bring him on.
Wow, that's rich coming from you. anyway, so every week when we do this, I want to make sure that you know you can suggest an album or even a single if you want to do that for the next Carl Landry Record Club. We'd like the album, so if you can suggest an album for the Carl Landry Record Club, do it. If you're listening on Spotify, right under the pod, there is a place where you can suggest an album right there. If you're listening on Apple, leave us a 5-star rating and a review and put the album you'd like in the reviews, or you can go to carllandryrecordclub.com and send us an email. The listener pick this week comes from Edward. It is an Apple Podcast review, actually. It is the 2022 release from Always called Blue Rev. Always is spelled with two V's, A-L-V-V-A-Y, and we will find out why later on. Edward says, please review Always' newer album, Blue Rev. That's all he said in the review and gave us 5 stars. So we're going to review Always. And the Mootloo album is the About a Boy soundtrack from Badly Drawn Boy, released in 2002. And the bonus single, which I did not look up, so I don't know when it came out, but I assume it's 2022 or 2023, is Steven Sanchez's Until I Found You. And when we get to that, I will let you know why I specifically did not look it up. So what do you want to do first? You pick. Just pick.
I don't know. What's
I have a decision fatigue.
Should we start with Badly Drawn Boy?
Let's start with Badly Drawn. About a Boy's sound.
Are you a fan of Badly Drawn Boy?
Don't know, only aware of the name Badly Drawn Boy. I've seen it a bazillion times, I think, but I don't remember consciously ever listening to Badly Drawn Boy.
And the next question is, have you seen this movie?
I don't think I have. Hugh Grant, right?
Hugh Grant, yeah.
Man, wasn't Hugh Grant? Hugh Grant was like the shit for...
I'm a huge Hugh Grant fan. I will watch anything Hugh Grant's in.
Really?
He's one of my favorites.
I'm a big Notting Hill fan. Saw it by myself. We'll watch it anytime it's on. Movie. I love Notting Hill. There is a Spike in Notting Hill as well.
That's right. His roommate. Have you seen Mickey Blue Eyes?
Have not.
That's like where Hugh Grant, sort of bumbling, goofy Englishman, gets kind of embroiled in some mob situation.
Oh.
It's a real clash of cultures kind of thing. It's great. Him and James Caan. It's an amazing combination.
It's almost like actors don't have the moments anymore that someone like Hugh Grant had. Like when we were growing up, and probably, I don't know, into the 2000s, it seemed like there was a star of the moment that would last 5 years. Like Steve Guttenberg was a star of the moment.
Not the first name I would have thought of, but
only because Short Circuit was on. My wife was watching Short Circuit last night. But even like Ali Sheedy, who is not just male actors, but like Ali Sheedy was like an it person. Oh, Molly Ringwald was an it person. Emilio Estevez was an it person.
Breakfast Club. I mean, the whole cast of Breakfast Club.
Charlie Sheen was an it person. Hugh Grant was an it person. Like there was just like this maybe 3 to 5 year window. And sometimes it lasted longer, but where like everybody was in on somebody, and Hugh Grant had that moment where everybody was in. And then didn't Hugh Grant get a hooker or something? And then he got in some trouble, may have hurt him for a moment, but
yeah, he kind of became tabloid fodder for a while, but then he actually did some of his best work after that. And even in recent years, he's done some good films. I mean, he's just, I think, he was sort of typecast in a certain type of role, you know, over time. But actually, what I like about A Boy is it's a little bit against his normal sort of character. He's cast against type a little bit.
Okay. Because
he's normally very likable. He's not technically, in theory, as likable as this movie. I don't want to give it away if people haven't seen it. But I did mention this to you.
I mean, it came out 20 years ago. You don't want to spoil it, but
I try not to spoil.
Okay, all right, all right. No spoiler.
But in case people want to see it, you know.
Yeah.
But I did mention this to you, and I'll say to the listeners, like, if you haven't seen the film, that's okay. Like, it's not imperative to have seen the film to enjoy this record, because even though musically some of the themes are based around the characters, I think the songs hold up on their own. You can absorb the songs in a way that's out of the context of the film. So,
sure.
So it's not a
prerequisite. I haven't seen the film, and I enjoyed it. So
yeah. So it's one of those albums, and it was actually Badly Drawn Boy's second album, like official album release. So give a little background on Badly Drawn Boy. His real name is Damon Michael Gow, aka Badly Drawn Boy. He grew up in the Brightmid area of Bolton, Greater Manchester, in England. Mm. And here's a weird one. He cites Bruce Springsteen. I was about to say Bruce Springreens, but I need to have some salad today. You know?
Yeah.
You got to have the roughage every day. But that's got nothing to do with what we're talking about. he cites Bruce Springsteen. Actually, I just got to say this real quick. You know Jaron.
Yes.
Jaron Olefsky.
Yes.
A great musician, longtime member of Amos's band.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, he would do these like Photoshop kind of things.
Okay.
And we somehow, like, we were talking about Bruce Springsteen, and came around to Bruce Springreens.
Okay.
And then he did it like a Photoshop of like the boss, kind of like in a very like cool pose, like inside of a field of like
greens.
Of greens, yeah.
Oh.
Bruce Springreens.
There we go.
There you go. That's where, I don't know, it came, that jumped in out of the memory bank somehow.
The chef, as if you're a Ricky listener, Jaron is responsible for the two Amos singing Rice to Ricky Sanchez intros.
Great producer, very talented multi-instrumentalist. Arranger, yep.
The chef.
He's the chef.
Yeah.
Jaron Olefsky, a.k.a. The Chef.
The Chef.
And also creator of the Bruce Springreens.
Yes.
Springreens.
Interesting that he would cite Springsteen as an influence, because
I don't hear it at all.
That.
Do you?
No.
I don't hear like any, with Badly Drawn Boy, I hear zero.
No.
Bruce Springsteen.
No, I actually hear like the Beatles. Like, I hear exactly where he's from, actually. I don't hear Springsteen, but that's cool.
Maybe it's more of a conceptual thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Who knows?
But he's an incredibly talented guy, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, producer. And when you hear his records, he will bring other session players in, but generally he plays everything. And a lot of times when you hear the records, a lot of it is just him. You know, he's one of these one-man band kind of guys. So just to give a little more background on kind of build up to this record. In the late 90s, he released a series of EPs, five in all throughout the late 90s, EPs 1, 2, and 3, and then followed by two more EPs, It Came From the Ground and Once Around the Block. And those EPs kind of really helped build a groundswell for him. Now, starting with the third EP, he began his extensive partnership with XL Recordings and that label, and he did a handful of releases with them, including this one. So along after the groundswell of those EPs, he started kind of getting some buzz, critical buzz. That set the stage for his debut album, The Hour of the Bewildered Beast, which I could have very easily picked that one. It's also a great listen. I think I feel a little more partial, or I have a personal affinity for this album because it's tethered to a movie that I like. But
because you love Hugh Grant.
I love Hugh Grant. I mean, I'll say this about it, as far as the movie. It's a little cheesy at times, but it's just a heartwarming coming of age tale.
Okay.
Of two people who are unlikely to form a friendship who form a friendship. It's beautiful. So
okay.
Just, yeah. And this
is literally about a boy, one might even say.
It is. Yeah. It is about a boy. It's about Hugh Grant and also about a boy.
Yeah.
So, and this soundtrack is just a huge part of it. It's hard to imagine the movie without this music. It's just has such a deep connection to the story, but again, also exists on its own. Many people consider his debut, The Hour of Bewildered Beast, to be his, still to this day, his best album. When critical acclaim, He won the Mercury Music Prize for it. He sold about 300,000 copies, you know, reeled off several singles with that one. So that kind of really put him on the map. And as it turned out, this album was the follow-up. This album is based on a book by Nick Hornby of the same title, about a boy who also wrote High Fidelity and is an excellent writer and has a deep connection to music. As a matter of fact, I think he has some kind of connection to Marah, like he's toured with them, or there's some kind of connection with Nick Hornby and Marah, Philly band. This record, again, like I mentioned, he sort of, he did bring in session players, but in a second I'll go through the credit list. Like, he played like everything on this, even beyond just your standard instruments. But just to push forward until we circle back to the record itself, in the years since then, he's released seven more albums, mostly over the next decade or so after this record. Third album was Have You Fed the Fish? That was in 2002. That was a good one. That was a good record as well. That he kind of got a little bit of critical backlash for that one because he kind of went for a little more of a mainstream sound on that one, something a little more polished, which maybe I understand if you liked his earlier work, maybe turn some listeners off. But I like the fact that he's someone who always challenges himself. Then 2004, One Plus One is One. 2006, clearly a nod to The Boss, Born in the UK. There, so that's a Springsteen, Spring Green's connection.
Sure.
2009, Is There Nothing We Could Do? It's what I'm talking about, part one, Photographing Snowflakes in 2010, and then Being Flynn, which is another soundtrack in 2012. And since then, in the last decade, he's only released one record, Banana Skin Shoes in 2020. So his pace has slowed, but he has amassed, between all the albums and EPs, a pretty extensive catalog. And I would say this record is really a standout in his catalog. It's worth checking out some of the others. If you dig this, it's definitely worth maybe going back to the first one and then exploring some of the later records. And I do like that he's someone who takes chances and has won critical acclaim but isn't necessarily afraid of alienating critics or even listeners. Like, I will say this, though. No matter what he does, at the core of his sound, there's always this very strong sense of composition and arrangement. You know, I think part of it is that he's a multi-instrumentalist. It's like he can map out the sound note for note with every instrument. And I think he really thinks about not just, you know, creating melodies within the instruments, but harmonies and counterpoint and arrangement. Like there's definitely almost an orchestral way he seems to think about music. And I think you hear that on this record.
Yeah. I mean,
it's there.
Yeah. I wish I didn't know it was a soundtrack because I wish it definitely sounds like almost the soundtrack to a musical or something. Like
it feels
like there is a narrative arc to it, you know, like everything is thought about that way. But I also knew it was a soundtrack, so maybe I was thinking of that, but it sort of sounded that way, you know, like, and that lead that I think that fits in with the orchestral part of it. It fits in also with him doing everything, probably allows you to formulate those ideas a little bit more than if you were doing it with a group of people.
That's a great point. And you'll hear, like on a concept album or in a musical, you'll hear certain melodies interpolated.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come back in different ways in different contexts. And I love that. And I see the connection you're making with musicals because musicals do that, you know, especially the best musicals have a way of repurposing certain melodies in different ways. And this album definitely does that. One other thing I'll say about him is, he has this ability to merge sort of simpler acoustic sounds that maybe even sound kind of lo-fi at times. Very simple. Like you can kind of see the picture of a guy strumming a guitar. And he complements that with these very lush kind of 3D string arrangements. When you listen to it mix-wise, not the easiest thing to do. And he just has a real sense of how to create that kind of dimension in his recording. So go through the credits of this, you know, I'm going to list off everything he played and then a few of the selective musicians he brought in. So Damon Gao, a.k.a. Badly Drawn Boy on vocals, acoustic guitar, electric guitar, bass, piano, synthesizer, keyboard, Celeste, Fender Rhodes, xylophone, harmonica, backing vocals, horns, strings, flute, percussion, and triangle. Last but not least, triangle. He played all these instruments on the record. And then it's clear that as he built the record up, he wanted to selectively bring in some different musicians. So he had Sasha Kristoff on bass, and these are only on selective tracks, but Joey Warrenker, well-known drummer, Pete Thomas on drums, Tom Rothrock on drum programming, synth, and bass, and he also co-produced a few of the tracks. Tom Rothrock, I think, is probably best known for his work with Beck. John Bryan, who is a brilliant film composer in his own right on fuzz guitar, bass, and there's a Philly connection. Mike Brenner, aka Slow-Mo, also played some lap steel on this record. And you know, Mike worked with Wild Pink. He's been on tour with them.
Yeah.
He's worked with Marah. He's worked with John Train. He has his own thing. So he's really just a great musician. And it's cool to see that he's in this mix of players. So go through a few of the highlights of this record. Now, my favorite song, and again, if you see the movie, you'll see it's a centerpiece, is the song Something to Talk About.
Yeah, I had that. That's the first fucking one on mine.
That's the obvious one. I mean,
yeah.
It's the centerpiece of the film and the score. I think it exemplifies Badly Drawn Boy's ability to craft a melody, and then there's like hooks within hooks. Like you hear the lead vocal, but then you hear that like vocal hook that comes right afterward, which is almost hookier than the main hook.
Which it does a couple of times, by the way. I think like the sort of like the hook after the hook thing, I think happens a few times in the album. But and this, you know, is we said earlier, but like there's almost. It would be easy to say it sounds like Britpop or whatever, but it definitely had like a Blur feel to me too. Yes. Like it reminded me of Blur in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. I can see that connection. It's definitely the heavy Britpop influences there. And even in his vocal delivery, you know, in the way he phrases, and not to mention musically, production-wise. Lyrically, I like this tune. It's a short lyric, but it explores the dynamic between the two main characters in the film, Hugh Grant and Nicholas Holt. But it also represents this thing of how you can take this music and sort of apply it in other contexts. It really just speaks to the dynamic of any two people who might sort of make an unexpected connection with one another. And that's kind of what the film is about. And
no
I also
spoilers. What's please
that?
Please don't spoil it.
No spoilers. Yeah, just it's a heartwarming tale.
Yes,
that's all I'll tell you.
May or may not be about a boy.
Yes, let's say most likely about a boy.
Could be. Yeah, you never know.
But also about Hugh Grant and his journey.
Who was not a boy. Well, was at one point would have been a boy, but you know, by the time he did this movie, he was a fully grown man.
Yeah. It was. It's heartwarming. That's all I can say. Just trust me when I say it's heartwarming.
Okay.
Great film review from me on that one. Excellent core melody, which like we were talking about this, you hear this melody come back at different parts of the record, which then I'll pivot to another one of the highlights for me is an instrumental tune, I Love NYE. Another one of yours as well.
Yeah,
of course.
It paints such a beautiful picture. This song, like I feel like I could even see the scene, even though I've never seen the movie, and it feels like a completed song that just doesn't have lyrics to it as well. Like, you can hear where the chorus would go and things like that.
That's what I love about his writing and his production is that. It's exactly what you said. You hear the melody, even without the vocal, there's always a very clear statement of melody. And in this case, you do hear that melody as a vocal, but you hear it in this new context in this song, which is what I love. There's sort of a simple acoustic melody that's kind of new in this particular, it's almost like an interlude. But then you hear that Something to Talk About melody come back, and then it kind of crescendos to this really beautiful string section. Then one other highlight I'll go for is River, Sea, Ocean. As you and me, river, sea, ocean, moving on so far away and dreaming. Quality sea makes it to ocean. Is that one of yours?
I fucking hate you.
Really? Three for three on this one?
Well, it's specifically... the wet, wet, wet instrumental into River, Sea, Ocean. I enjoy, like, they go back to back in the album tracking or whatever. And it's just River Sea Ocean, such a nice like little relationship song or whatever.
Yeah, you know? Really is. And what I like about that one is you hear how his vocal melodies are sort of an extension of the core instrumental melodies.
Mm-hmm.
His vocal kind of mirrors what's happening instrumentally. And I like the kind of that sort of ethereal sort of driving rhythm that it has. So I think this is a great record. Again, if you feel compelled, take a couple hours and watch the movie. But this record holds up on its own. And if you like this one, it's definitely checking out, you know, some of Badly Drawn Boy's other work.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to say because you picked out the only songs that I picked out.
Wow. Out of like 14, 15 tracks?
Man. Yeah, like I almost want to like screenshot it to send it to you. But those were specifically the four songs that I picked, the fourth one being Wet, 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 the instrumental into River, Sea, Ocean. So that I enjoyed it. And it does sound like a soundtrack song. And now I'm going to watch the movie so I can hear the context, because you said it definitely ties well into the movie. So it seems like it's worth watching the movie if I enjoy the album.
It's cool in a way that you'll have heard the record first.
Yep.
And now you can see how it's you kind of work backwards on it.
Sure.
But yeah, when you see the film, it's one of those scores. And I should say the Weitz brothers who directed this movie, they very specifically wanted Badly Drawn Boy to do the music, and they were right on the money. They just had a feeling that this film they were making would fit perfectly with what he could do musically, and he took the opportunity and really made something special. And some of these songs on here are among his most popular songs in concert, and even when you look on Spotify. So sometimes it's cool in a way that if you have it takes some of the guesswork out, I think, as a writer, if you already have themes that you can kind of latch onto.
Yeah, write a song about this instead, right. Like, you know, like the topics are presented to you rather than trying to search your brain for something different to write about, even though you've written a ton of songs, you know. I imagine.
It does that sort of legwork for you, and then it kind of frees you up to work within like certain parameters.
Sure.
But this is just a great record, and I think Badly Drawn Boy, there was a time when he was touring more in the U.S., but I feel like he probably hasn't been here in almost a decade, but he still tours very extensively in the U.K. I saw that he has a big tour coming up, so I think it's been a while since he's made it to the U.S. There's artists like this. Like, we had this discussion with Jamiroquai.
Yeah.
You know, Jamiroquai had a big moment here, but rarely tours here anymore, but is huge, you know, in other parts of the world. So I think Badly Drawn Boy has mainly been focused on touring the U.K., but I've never seen him live.
If you don't need the money, touring the U.S. seems like a fucking enormous hassle the last couple of years anyway. So it wouldn't be a bad time to avoid touring over here if you didn't have to. You
know? Yeah, and if you're big in the U.K., I mean,
yeah,
it's much easier. You can get across that country in a week and a half. You can hit a ton of markets.
Yeah, and, for sure.
It's less ground to cover.
Yeah. Why don't we do that single you brought, the Steven Sanchez one, Until I Found You. The interesting things about it is, like, the reason I didn't look it up is I'm listening to it and I go, well, this must be a cover, right? And if it's not a cover, then it's lovely. If it is a cover, it's fine. But if it's not a cover, it's even more interesting. Is it a cover?
I don't think so.
It's a cool song.
I assumed it was an original. Maybe I should just quickly check and make sure. Because it's funny you said that. I think maybe that's part of why I liked it. It sounds like something that was written in like 1962.
Yeah, it's not a cover. It's not a cover.
It's not a cover, right?
No.
I thought it wasn't, but then I had to pause for a second there.
Yeah, it isn't. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it came out in the 50s or 60s or whatever. Like, it has like that, like, big bopper, like fucking Elvis, you
Roy
know,
Orbison, Everly
Roy
Brothers.
Orbison vibe to it. It's so good, man. It's so good.
It's such a good track. I should give props to Delia. This was on one of her playlists, and I heard this. I was, you know, once in a while, like, you listen through a playlist more passively, then all of a sudden there's this one tune that, like, jumps out at you. So she was playing one of her playlists, and I heard this. So Steven Sanchez, I mean, someone who just emerged in the last couple of years. This single actually, I think, first came out in fall of 2021, was kind of re-released again last year. So it's the last couple of years. But give a little quick backdrop on him. He's a 20-year-old Nashville-based artist. I mean, he's young. And so it's amazing. How did a 20-year-old like writing this kind of music? It's kind of a trip. But he's another one of these artists who's emerged on TikTok, something of a TikTok star, although quite different than a lot of the other TikTok stars I've heard. In June 2020, he posted a cover of Cage the Elephant's Cigarette Daydreams on TikTok, and he started to build a huge following on there. So just AU and Jason have mentioned this, how like people will be on TikTok and get signed like a month or two later. He's an example of that. He put out his debut single the following month in July of 2020, and that led to a deal with Republic Records. So,
wow,
you know, just some traction on TikTok, and he got signed. And this single dropped September of 21 and was sort of released in advance of his debut EP, What Was Not Now. Since then, he's released a few more singles, including the Easy on My Eyes EP, which also features this song. He's performed on Jimmy Fallon, and he's currently on a club and theater tour, which is completely sold out, like his own headlining tour. So it's one of these things where he's had this big success online, but it's translating to ticket sales, because I imagine he delivers live. You get the sense that he's not just sort of something fabricated in the studio. He's a true artist. And
have you listened to other songs? Do they sound like this? Do they have like this?
You know, I haven't even done a dive. Like I kept thinking I should, and I kind of just latched onto this one. But I'm curious because, you know, he's very new to me. And I mean, if he's doing this sound all the way, it's kind of amazing that this sound would connect on TikTok, right? I mean, yeah. I don't think younger kids know this music, do they? I mean, this is
But it doesn't matter on TikTok. The things that catch on TikTok are not always what you would think they were. Like there was like 2 weeks where what's that song by The Outfield? Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
That was like all over the place.
Because it's so arbitrary in a way. It's just, it's like snippets. Whatever snippet catches people's attention.
And it's like hooks, I think, a lot of the time. It's just like it's a snippet and something that's catchy and they like it and is universal, you know? Like there's something about the hooks, like even, you know, the Sueco song we talked about last week, even if you don't like the song or whatever, like that hook is a, like an earworm or whatever. And what was the other song we did that AU and Jason brought us?
I feel like
us?
There's been a number of them they brought in.
Yeah, like it just like, it gets you, you know, and only needs to get you for 10 seconds on TikTok and then everybody jumps on it or whatever. So yeah, I don't think it needs to necessarily be a style of music. I think it just needs to—
whatever connects.
Whatever basically. Connects, yeah.
Yeah, and this one channels something from like the early 60s, like we were saying, Roy Orbison. When I hear this, I think Roy Orbison, I think the Everly Brothers in particular. Mm,
yeah.
And it's a very particular brand of, I would say, early 60s melodic pop and rock music. And when you hear that sound, you recognize it.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable to me that a 20-year-old has tapped into this sound. I'd be interested to hear the story of how he, you know, how he discovered that kind of music, because it seems second nature to him.
Well, by the way, not unlike what's her name? Rehab.
Oh, Amy Winehouse.
Amy Winehouse, you know, finding influences don't necessarily line up with, you know, her age and, you know, where she's from or whatever. Like, where does that voice come from, you know?
Yeah, and she had another strand of the 60s, almost like the girl groups and a very particular sound. It's interesting. That's a nice parallel. I didn't think of that. Artists who somehow, like, capture a very specific sound of a very specific era and somehow are able to update it and make it feel modern. I love that. I think it's what I like so much about this song. It's what I love about Amy Winehouse, because there's a fine line between imitation and emulation. And I would say this is emulation. What Amy Winehouse did was emulation. You take those core influences that are recognizable, but you bring something of your own personality, your own musical vision to it. And what I'll say about Steven Sanchez is it's a very high level of songwriting and production craft on this record. Unlike some of the other TikTok songs we've discussed that feel kind of like incomplete in a way.
Yeah.
I would say this one feels very fully realized. It's a fully crafted song, nice arrangement. It doesn't feel like it's missing anything. And one of the things I'll say about it is his voice has this like effortless clarity and resonance to it.
Yeah.
That also channels those artists that we're talking about, the Everly yep. Brothers, Roy Orbison, so on. And I like that it's a love song that manages to feel heartfelt, but never feels sappy or overly sentimental. So really just a great tune, and it has me curious now to kind of do the full deep dive into the rest of his work.
Yeah, it was awesome. And seeing that it's not a cover is even better. Like, cause to me, if it was a cover, it was nice, but I was like, well, this probably sounds exactly like the original does, but there is no original in this
right.
case. So yeah, it's awesome. Good pick for
right
sure.
Right on. I like this new thing we're doing. The new,
yeah.
The fresh single. It's,
yeah, because we're cool young guys.
Yeah, we're cool, hip young guys, dude.
Cool young guys. Just sitting around hoping my wife does one of three things.
Yeah, just hanging at 7-Eleven, drinking coffee.
You know.
Making chit-chat.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Our other album comes from, our listener album came from Edward. It is Always a Blue Rev. Always is spelled A-L-V-V-A-Y-S. Why is it spelled that way? Well... singer, who is Molly Rankin, says, after we started playing shows, we found out the name was already taken by a dream pop act signed to Sony. To avoid any friction, we split the W down the middle, turned it into two V's. I'm not the litigious type. So there you go.
Hey, that's a nice fix for a
nice fix. It looks pretty cool. When you see it in the first place, you're like, is that a W or is it two V's? It's just
visually more
enough.
Interesting actually than if it just said Always, you know?
Yeah. I think I've mentioned this before. Tommy Conwell and I used to have a little joke about Tommy Conwell, just for context, if you're listening, had like a medium-ish hit in the late 80s called,
I'm Not Your Man, right?
I'm Not Your Man was the hit, right. I loved I'm 17, but that was not the hit. I'm Not Your Man was the hit. And, you know, he played on the American Music Awards, blah, blah, blah. It was a very quick rise, very quick fall as well. But Tommy ended up working at... 94 WYSP with me and hosting the local show. And we would always joke that local bands would always like spell their name a little bit differently. So it made it harder to find them on the internet. like we would always find ways for why this local band wasn't going to make it. And sort of like Screwdriver, this isn't a real band, but they would spell it with a K with screw and a Y with driver, just so when you go to find it, it makes it just a little more difficult.
Yeah, just to undermine their chances of greater success.
Just a little bit.
Possible.
Yeah. They think they're being clever, but really they're setting up yet another obstacle in front of them. So, but is, you know, at this point, the internet is far more advanced than it was at that. So Always, the name of the album is Blue Rev, came out in 2022. They are a Canadian band that consists of Molly Rankin, who I said, who is the sort of the originator of the band, Carrie McClellan, who plays keys, Alec O'Hanley on guitars, Abby Blackwell on bass, and Sheridan Riley on drums. They're from Charlottetown, but they are based in Toronto now. Now, Molly Rankin's dad was part of at least popular in Canada, group in the late 80s and 90s, and maybe you've heard of them, called the Rankin family. It was like a folk like outfit of 12 siblings.
Oh, wow.
They had one album go quadruple platinum in Canada. Which now platinum in Canada is 100,000, but 100,000 in Canada is a lot of records. So they were like a really big deal. Her dad was. So
there are bands that are big there that somehow don't connect here. I mean, I always think of the two markets as deeply connected, but there are differences.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So she grew up in a musical family, obviously, and her neighbor, Carrie McClellan, was actually her friend and her neighbor, and they wrote music together when they were young. And she actually, Molly put out a solo EP in 2010, and then found, who was the next person? Alex O'Hanley. And then found the rest of the musicians to put together Always. I think it ended up being, not on purpose, but it ended up being, I think, an interesting combination with Badly Drawn Boy, because I hear some of similar sort of dream poppy Beach Boys type influences. And I would say that this, I hear more maybe like 80s postmodern and Beach Boys in the music than Beatles specifically, but it does feel like they fit together like on the same podcast, right?
These are two, unlike some other ones, like where we did like, oh, I don't know, like a folk album and then
Slipknot.
Some sort of like, yeah, sludge metal record, yeah. Like which we've done many of those. These two complement each other. They seem like in the same universe, at least.
Yep. And Molly said, as far as influences, it's hard to objectively know which ones influenced the most, but we spent a fair chunk of our 20s fawning over Teenage Fan Club, Dolly Mixture, The Smiths, and Magnetic Fields. I drove my mom nuts with my Oasis obsession. I think of those, Oasis and The Smiths seem like the things that I hear the most, but they do have a, like, there is to me a very specific 80s, 90s alternative postmodern feel. To me is what I hear the most.
I was surprised when you reeled off her influences.
Yes.
That My Bloody Valentine wasn't there. Yeah. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just because I love My Bloody Valentine. I'm obsessed with the album Loveless. It's weird because I was just listening to that recently. And then I don't know if maybe because I was listening to that recently and I just hear an undeniable connection there, especially in the guitars, right?
Yeah, I think so too. But I think the Smiths feels like in the same world to me as that does. But yes, I hear My Bloody Valentine as well. So they move to Toronto and they put out a single called Diversion and they play shows and that song gets some traction at college radio. And they signed to Polyvinyl Records and put out their debut album and then a song called Archie Marry Me. Becomes a real hit on college radio. So much of a hit on college radio, Ben Gibbard of Death Cab covered that song.
You've expressed explicitly your contempt for matrimony.
At some, I think it was some BBC thing. It's on YouTube. I'll include it in the show notes for this. They get nominated for Breakthrough Artist of the Year, an Alternative Album of the Year, the Juno Awards, and then their follow-up is the Antisocialites in 2017, and then the next one was Blue Rev in 2022. So there wasn't supposed to be that big of a break in between Antisocialites and Blue Rev, but COVID happened and made it difficult for them to rehearse and write together. You know, we talked to John Ross from Wild Pink. By the way, I hear Wild Pink in, and I'll get to it. I hear Wild Pink in their music a little bit too. Not that they're influenced, but maybe that they came from the same musical influences. That prevented the album from coming out sooner. The producer of the record is Sean Everett, who has done engineering/producing for War on Drugs, for The Killers, for Alabama Shakes, all of which sort of fit in the same sort of place, I would say, musically.
Yeah, there's a certain like vast quality to the recording that I can see a thread with all those bands.
It's an interesting album that is, bands like this, I think, have the sound and feel of pop music, like dreamy pop music. I keep saying Beach Boys, but that's, I keep like hearing Pet Sounds in the album when I'm listening to it. But it's not like you come away from these, that they do not have typical sort of like pop song structure in that they're not like earworms or whatever, the songs themselves, I don't think. I think it's like an interesting album because it feels poppy, but it isn't poppy, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of talked about that certain bands that there's a great sense of melody within it, but it's not, there aren't hooks that are just immediate somehow, which is a weird thing to say because a great hook is a great melody.
Yep.
But there's a way to do that. There's a way to construct the hooks that's incredibly memorable, and that's not the focus here, I don't think. But there is, yeah, there's a great sense of sort of melodic development in these songs.
Feel, vibe, like there's a ton of vibe to it. There's a song called, I mentioned Wild Pink, there's a song called After the Earthquake, which is essentially like about
got
the
that
end
here,
of,
right here.
Yeah. There's a lyric, and I think the lyrics are good. Those days I'd never let you fall apart, but things fade like the scent of a brand new car. Why would I ever fall in love again when every detail is over the guardrail?
That's great.
Is a cool, and but it this song in particular, it gave me Wild Pink vibes, almost Tom Petty as well, which is not something that I hear in the rest of the album. And there's a nice little, after the chorus, a little like guitar hook thing that happens that is like catchy that gets in your brain after that chorus.
Another, that's why I thought the Badly Drawn Boy connection was right on point, because they also have a lot of hooks within the instrumental. Like there's hooks within hooks. You know, there's the vocal line, but then other instruments will sometimes carry something that's even more memorable.
Yep, for sure. What else did I have here on this album? Hold on, I'm going back to my notes. Velveteen. Which has like, I think is a very good example of that 80s postmodern vibe that I'm, because I almost hear the Pixies in there, who also like delved into the same sort of sonic structure, but without like giant hooks. But this one has a big chorus to it. And her voice almost reminds me of Belly a little bit. Like, I don't know if you remember Belly, which was a cool 90s band.
Yeah. That
Feed the Tree was their
name
big,
has come up before, hasn't it?
Maybe. There's a bunch of female-fronted 90s alt bands that I bring up all the time when I hear a female-fronted band. Like, I bring up Juliana Hatfield a lot, and I bring up
Evan
Mazzy
Dando.
Star.
I think that we talked about her with Evan Dando.
Right? Evan Dando, yeah. And I really dug that. And then the last song I wanted to bring up that I thought is clever that I really like is Belinda. Listen to the, so the name of the song is Belinda, and you're like, why? And then you hear the chorus, and the chorus is basically the same like chord progression and melody of Heaven is a Place on Earth, the Belinda Carlisle song.
Right.
But which is, I listened to it like five times trying to figure out what they were talking about. And I love the lyrics in the chorus. Paradise and I find myself paralyzed, knowing all too well terrified, but I'll find my way. I think is a nice little, you know, turn of phrase there. And I love that song too.
Yeah, that's what I really liked about this record is you absorb it, I think, initially musically, because there's a lot happening musically. But then when you get into the lyrics, like, oh, wow, there's some lyrics that you can really connect to and latch onto as well. I feel like you need to, it's like you got to peel the onion a little bit further to get to that, because it's not what necessarily grabs you up front, you know?
Yeah, it's not, and I don't think it's a one listen at all. It is I think sonically, to your point, there's so much going on when you're listening to it, you almost don't know what to expect song to song. And I don't, like, for songs that get you quickly, you almost, once you get the rhythm of what they're doing, you're waiting for each specific thing to happen in each song. Like when we did the, what was the Springsteen record? Was it The River? The one that I said sounded like every song you could sing, I Want to Wish You a Merry Christmas to. Is that the double album? Is The River the double album?
I think that was it, although that is an amazing take.
Yeah, I think it's a double album.
And it's not, you can sing I Wish You a Merry Christmas, and it's not just a single, it's a double album.
Yes,
every you're saying song. Like 20 songs worth.
Everyone, of, I want to wish you a merry every song. Every
I think
song,
you yeah. you actually I did it with like four or five of them.
Every time. But that album specifically, you get a feel for it very quickly. You're waiting for the bridge and you're waiting for the chorus, and they happen. And there's like this sort of you're satisfied because you're like, where is it? Oh, there it is. And that's the thing that I'm waiting for. And this album, I almost is like a maze almost in that I didn't, when I was listening to it, I was listening for all these different things and then the song would end. And I think it like, it takes a minute to get to know the songs in a way that is a little more difficult than an album that is a more immediate, like The River is.
Yeah. And I think in some ways that's what makes it special too, because I love records that you live with them a bit and they just get better and better.
Yeah.
You know, it takes you a little time to absorb initially, but then as you take that time, it kind of reveals itself. One other song that I really liked was Many Mirrors.
Yeah, that's a good tune too.
That one kind of channels the Cranberries to me.
Yeah, yes, yes. Another female fronted 90s artist.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And, you know, at times they're like, to me, the perfect hybrid of My Bloody Valentine and Cranberries, you know? Like some of the sonics of My Bloody Valentine, but mixed in with the Cranberries.
Should we do a Cranberries album?
Yeah, absolutely. See,
it would be great, but for me to pick it, I think it would be disingenuous because I remember listening to the Cranberries. I remember liking the important songs. I'm looking at like the track list of No Need to Argue and trying to remember if I really ever just sat and listened to that album over and over again. And I didn't. And everybody's else is doing it, so why can't we? I didn't either. I think I just liked the songs that I knew from them.
It was more of like a singles band for you.
Yeah, for me. Awesome singles, but I don't remember ever like just fucking listening to those albums. So I'd be lying.
I think it was somewhere in between for me. I do think I spent a good amount of time with the debut, I think, which had Linger.
Yes, that was Everyone's Doing It, So Why Can't We?
Yeah, because I remember that song caught my ear, and then I kind of did like a deep dive into the album. That song, little tangent, that's a great example of the instrumental hook. The strings are probably a bigger hook than the actual lead vocal hook.
But, and by the way, like their hits are fucking fantastic.
Yeah, Zombie. I mean, what a monster song that is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they have probably six hit songs that were all truly fucking awesome. Truly. I like this album a lot. I like this band. I think this band's interesting. I'm going to go back and listen to the other records. I was actually looking. I think they're going to tour this year. They actually felt like an Australian band to me.
But that's what I thought at first. I thought, you know, I feel like there are a lot of Australian bands that kind of mine the same musical territory.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it that a band that, sort of like what Steven Sanchez did with that song, you know, the influences are recognizable, so you immediately make those comparisons. But then once you live with the record or you live with the material, it's something else beyond that.
Dude, they're playing the Dell.
Oh, that's Connor Barwin's thing. You know what? That's how I recognized their name because I saw a promo for Connor's event.
Is that Connor's? So they're playing with Alex G, who we talked about on the year end episode with Jason.
One of Jason's picks was Alex G song.
Yeah.
But that's how I first, because I wasn't familiar with them, but I thought I recognized the name. Then I realized they're co-billing with Alex G for Connor's yearly event, the Make the World Better Foundation. We should probably have him on at some point.
I'd love to have Connor.
We first met because of his event, right?
Yes, we first
met. Amos and I first met you there.
At the backstage area or the VIP area of his event.
That's right, because I remember you were there with the King.
I was there with the King. And by the way, I couldn't stay, even though Amos was the surprise guest, which I did not know until I got there.
Did you not see? Because I sang with him. Did you not see our set?
No, I couldn't because my wife was down the shore with, I remember this night very, very specifically, but my wife was down the shore with her mom. And so I had dog duty. So my dad got tickets to the VIP thing and I could go to the VIP thing, but I couldn't stay for the show. And then I found out when I got there that Amos was the special guest, which I was like, I remember calling Val on the way home being like, yo, I fucking met Amos Lee at the show. And like, he knows who I am. Like that was my,
it was a starstruck kind of moment.
It was, but I, and now I'm more annoyed with him than ever starstruck, just to be clear. I've certainly switched completely. But it looks like it's selling pretty well at the Dell. That's cool. Yeah, I would love to see this show. And we should definitely have Connor on. Connor was on the Ricky once, but Connor has never been on this podcast.
Yeah, I performed at Connor's wedding.
Oh, you did tell me that. Yeah. That's right. Yeah,
I played the whole ceremony. I provided was the musical soundtrack for the ceremony, and then I played he and Laura's first dance.
That is,
it was actually an XX song that they requested. So, and it was a trip because Jason Kelsey was there. So, like, it was kind of cool meeting all these like Eagles players.
Yeah,
Riley Cooper was there.
There you go,
acting kind of crazy.
Yeah,
I don't want to go too much into it. There's more to it than that. But he behaved in, if you know anything about Riley Cooper, he was kind of behaving in a way that you would expect from Riley Cooper.
We used to see him at Prime Stash, which was the bar that was owned by Brent that was on Chestnut, like 2nd and Chestnut, that was owned by Selleck. We used to hang out there all the time. It was always empty. The two things I remember is Jason Kelsey was always just in there eating by himself, like very quietly. And man, we saw Riley Cooper there a few times. One specifically with, who was that little white wide receiver that that was like went to Air Force? And I don't think he ever made the team.
Oh, he was on the practice squad.
Well, he was on preseason. He was on the team. And I can't remember, but they came in one night and they were fucking. Riley Cooper seems like he could drink, man. That's just, I guess, what I would say.
You know, he was definently drunk and acting a fool.
Shocking. Shocking.
Yeah, it wasn't surprising at all. You know.
Yeah. All right. Well, good suggestion for always. Remember, if you'd like to suggest your album, do it right under the pod there on Spotify where it says what album should we do next. Do it in the Apple Podcast Reviews or email us. You can do that at carllandryrecordclub.com. That's it. Talk to you next time.
Stay free, my goose.